2020 was a rough year for a lot of people, but for me, it was pretty significant. My relationship of 9 years ended, and then I immediately got COVID.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was pretty bad, man. And I sat around depressed. I couldn't see anybody. It was a pretty dark time. But to make myself feel better, I started doing these TikTok live streams where I'd sit at my piano and take like song requests from people just to like have something to do while I'm sitting alone and depressed. And the songs I was getting requested to do, some of them people were screen recording and then reposting. A couple of them started going viral.
Wow.
They were just covers of, you know, different songs. And that ended up attracting Greg Collins, the Grammy award-winning producer of U2 and No Doubt and a bunch of other amazing people.
Never heard of
him. Yeah.
Heard of those bands.
He watched... he watched me and was like, hey, man, maybe we should do an album. And I got to start working with all these incredible people on making my first album. And I would have never, I don't feel like I would have ever done that if I hadn't gone through a situation like that. So, you know, it just extends my career into different avenues that I wasn't really looking for at the time. And honestly, I don't know if I would have recorded an album if I hadn't gone through all of that, you know, heavy stuff.
So we can all basically thank COVID for this album.
You bet. Maybe I should call it the COVID album. I don't know.
You could release COVID 1 through 19.
Exactly. If there are not 19 tracks on this album, I'm doing something wrong.
I'm Jack Hergith.
And I'm Stephen Kramer Glickman.
And this is Never Surrender,
the show where we sit down with the most successful people in the entertainment industry to talk about failure and how they pushed through it and never gave up.
Because we've all failed. We've all had setbacks.
Yeah, we've all questioned whether to keep going.
But at some point, everybody struggles.
Yeah, I mean, I've been let go from some of my favorite jobs.
You and me both. We just hope that by listening to this podcast, it will help give you the strength to never surrender.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This person has a career that spans over two decades in music.
She made history by becoming the youngest solo artist to reach number one on the Billboard pop charts at the age of 13 and released her self-titled debut album, JoJo, soon after.
In 2020, she won her first Grammy for Best R&B Song for Say So, her collaboration with PJ Morton.
She was also chosen to sing the official anthem, The Change, for Joe Biden's 2020 presidential campaign.
But she's been through a lot as well. I mean, there was even a time where she felt like her career was completely over. But she kept on making music, pushed through, and never surrendered.
This is JoJo.
Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only JoJo is here.
Yes!
Woo!
Yeah!
Wow! So awesome to have you on the show.
Happy to be here.
It's a big honor. You know,
and you know what? We're happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you really are.
We really are. You're such a phenomenal artist and such a phenomenal singer, and you've been phenomenal for a long time. I'm going to use that word a lot about you.
Oh my gosh!
How did you get started? Where did you grow up? Let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
Let's go right to the beginning. Where did you grow up?
All right, taking it back. I was born in Vermont. Shout out Bernie Sanders.
I've been to the Ben and Jerry's ice cream factory there. Have you ever been?
I haven't been.
Oh.
Downtown Burlington.
I haven't really been back to Vermont since I was born.
Okay.
Really?
So, yeah, it was just a quick in and out, quite literally. You
okay.
know, just get out the womb. And then we moved all around New England. And I grew up mostly in south of Boston. And I've been singing as long as I can remember. Both my parents sang, and I wanted to sound like the people I heard around me, which was my mom. She had she still has a beautiful voice, and like the divas I grew up listening to. So I always had kind of a sharp ear.
Yeah, I think I heard somewhere that you were singing for the ladies down at the hair salon or the
That's
nail
right.
salon or something like that.
That's right. They, and I'll still see them around town when I go back home to Foxborough for the holidays and stuff. And they're like, "Do you remember when, you know, you would sing for a dollar?" And I'm like, "Yep, I was hustling even then," because I would be like, "What's your favorite song?" Or "What Aretha Franklin song do you want to hear me sing?" And I would make them pay me.
And it really is no joke to say that you were successful early on. You were offered your first record deal at, what, 6 years old?
It was
something
more
like that?
8 or 9.
Okay.
But still absurdly young.
That's very, very young. Now, walk us through how you go from, because look, we live in a world where there's lots of people that are singing and doing
mm-hmm.
things. How does something like that happen? How does that happen to you?
Well, I don't know how it happens these days, because now like people are discovered on TikTok discovered. But for me,
yeah,
it was just more like I was singing for anybody who would listen. So anybody I could get myself in front of. Like I said, I was a strange, precocious, very driven little girl. And I went to like my first big concert, which was Kiss 108 concert, which is the top 40 station in Boston. I won tickets, like called in, and had it in my mind that I would sing my way backstage. And my mom let me do this, like not by myself. She held my hand through it. But Britney Spears was performing in sync. This had to be like 2000.
Oh my God.
In 2000, I would have been 9.
Yeah.
So yeah, that had to be like 99, 2000. So I started singing for the security guards and like the first one. I was like, I really want to go backstage and meet the artists. And they're like, yeah, sure, that makes sense, you should. And then I sang for about 4 different people until I made it to Britney Spears' dressing room. And
what kind of security was that?
Not very good.
God, yeah, seriously.
And I was
this
just,
is in Boston?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
At the Tweeter Center. It was in Mansfield. That was the venue.
Wow, that's amazing.
And so sang for her and her manager Larry Rudolph, and they explained that they were like starting a production company and looking to sign artists. And then within, I think, a month, there was a contract that, you know, seeing if
Holy
I wanted to be a
God.
Part of that.
What?
But my mom was like, no, bitch, you are 9. So she didn't say that, but that was definitely the vibe. So I thought she was trying to ruin my life. I'm like, this is my big shot. Long story short, I kept being just as driven. I would even put hats out on the street if we'd be in the city in Boston and Providence, and I would like, and people would gather around and I would sing. Yeah.
I mean, God.
So what did Britney have to say when you're in her dressing room singing for her? Like, what was her reaction?
And also, to make
did she
it,
want to like sign you right there in the spot, or like how did that?
Yeah,
did that work out?
I don't quite remember if it uh-huh. was her wanting to sign me right there in the spot, but like she wouldn't let me go. She just, not in a weird way, but she was. And she was super young and passionate and excited. And I think she was just touched to see such a young girl singing her songs in her own way. You know, I put my own spin on her songs.
What did you sing? Do you remember what you sang?
I don't remember, but probably Baby One More Time, or I don't remember. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For something like that to happen, it's kind of an outrageous thing. I mean, you know, as an adult, you know, performer, If you heard that a kid sang their way backstage, you'd be like, what are you talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, it is outrageous. That's a good word for it.
Yeah.
It's weird. And it's never happened to me. Like, I'm trying to think of I mean, I have been really floored by some people's talents, like who will make their way to me. And I love to see that like eye of the tiger and that courage
so
and
driven.
The commitment that it takes, that drive. Mm-hmm. I love that. And it does remind me of when I was a kid. So, but yeah, it's pretty weird. I don't That's, necessarily yeah. recommend that you do that. It's kind of dangerous. But thankfully, my mom was like, hawk-eyed on me and right. never let anything weird happen.
Well, I tried to get backstage yeah. at a Britney Spears concert once, and they were like,
it was
no.
a different reaction.
Yeah, totally different vibe. No, sorry. Like, what if I sing for you? They're like, no, you're some weird old dude. Like,
please
not
get
letting
out
you
here,
out
Jack.
Back here. Sorry. Then I was led out of the building. Pretty
That's crazy. Really
so,
funny.
So 3 years from that, I did sign a record deal at 12 years old.
Wow, that's so Whoa. Crazy.
What, yeah. Now, where did you sign at 12 years old?
I signed to a label called Blackground, and that was the label that Aaliyah's uncle made for her because she was so young when she started. And I had been around to a bunch of different labels. This manager took me and my mom under his wing and, you know, kind of whisked us into this life that I had never seen before because we come from a real humble background. And I mean, I flew on a private plane for the first time. I went from sharing a room with my mom and her cleaning houses for a living to like all this wild stuff.
Yeah.
So within a few months, we decided to go with Blackground because they had the experience of turning Aaliyah into a superstar. And we didn't even realize she was 14 when she started.
Wow.
So that was, it just felt like family.
Now, was there any pressure? Was there any pressure from like Disney or from Nickelodeon? Did these places did they try to find you at any point in time?
Yeah, I had some very serious meetings over there and like fun meetings and them wanting to do different things. But I hated how young I was. And I didn't want to be seen as that young.
Yeah,
and I didn't want to be associated with something that would like, I felt, pigeonhole me, especially with how grown my first single was, Leave Get Out. Like I just wanted to be grown. I wanted to lie about my age and say I was 16, and they were like, no, you're 13, it's cool. I'm like, damn, I'm so embarrassed.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Didn't Disney Channel try to bring you in for Hannah Montana? Was that part of?
Yeah, there were some talks about it. Mm-hmm.
Good God. Now, like, are you happy? Are you happy that, like, you didn't go and do that show?
I think my bank account would look a lot heftier if I did that. But I stand behind all the decisions I've made with my life.
Because you're such a talented artist, and at no point did you have to break. It doesn't feel like at any point in time did you have to be like break away, like break an image,
right,
to change and be something else.
No, I haven't had to do that.
Totally shatter an image.
No, I just had to like
awesome.
Break through my own mental shackles and like insecurities and things like that. But I think that's most people, you know,
yeah.
when we're trying to find our footing. But no, I didn't really have to like go against a system. Yeah, I didn't have to break a mold like that.
Yeah.
Now, your mom was your manager, right? What
yes.
was that like going from having your mom, like just doing like everyday mom things, and then suddenly she's, you know, handling your business?
She did a great job. But it was not appropriate. Like in retrospect, I'll just be 100%. Like, because when we're coming from the humble background that we come from, and that's such a weird way to put it. But like, I'm just saying, it's not like we come from like, we don't know lawyers. We don't know like business people. We just like, we come from a small town. And she read the book, Everything You Need to Know About the Music Industry, and felt like she knew we needed help. And so we had lawyers in place and everything, but then we ended up getting burned and realizing that lawyers can sometimes be in bed or in cahoots with a label. So I think her intentions were so incredibly good, and she did a great job of making sure that my education came first, making sure that I was going to be a full person at the end if I wanted there to be an end, you know, of this. And I graduated with a 4.0 because she didn't let me drop out. I wanted to drop out of high school. I was like, this is what I want to do. I'm famous. Who gives a f-? You know? And she was like, no. And I really appreciate that now in retrospect because she treated me like a daughter and not a product ever.
Wow.
And,
right.
and,
yeah.
and did that
Amazing.
Mean that I lost out on, you know, making more money? Yes, because she wouldn't allow me to, like, say, do a late night show in L.A. and then fly and do another show in New York. She was like, you're not going to get enough sleep, you know, and that's pretty rare. My mom is an amazing woman.
Wow.
But I just don't think that this industry is not for sensitive people.
No, it's not. And you know what? It's so difficult for parents. Like I have a family that I'm friends with.
You're friends with a family?
I'm friends with this family where their son is a very, very talented actor. And mm-hmm. so sometimes when he's auditioning for stuff, like I'll help out or help him go over his stuff. But this family, they're struggling financially,
mm-hmm.
and they got to a place where the kid was up for a job that paid $10,000 a week and was a 30-episode lock-in of 30 episodes at 10 grand a week, and which would change every single aspect of their family's life financially.
Yes.
And watching the pressure that this family put on this kid was... I had to do everything in my power as a friend to be like, you're doing it wrong. Mm. Stop telling the kid he's going to get the part. Like, stop telling him that he deserves it. Stop telling.
Oh, there's like, no deserve.
No, none of that works for this. Mm. Like, and then he didn't get the part. And it was,
and then that's devastating.
And then you stopped being his friend.
Yeah,
which was really
yeah. I was like, get out of my life, kid.
No, you but, loser.
Yeah,
but it was friends with you.
It was rough because then suddenly that kid felt the responsibility for his entire family.
Look,
and you're like, I can only imagine for you.
I can relate. I'm an only child, and it was really just me and my mom, and she never put any pressure on me. I know she really did her best, but I absolutely felt like I was responsible for keeping us afloat. And even when she would be like, I want to take you out of this industry. This is no longer good for you. Like, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose himself? Like, she was just feeling all these
wow.
things. And I was like, no. Who's going to take care of me, us, if it's not me? I felt very, I don't remember feeling like a child ever, actually, to be honest with you. I had a lot of masculine energy and a lot of big adult energy, for sure, because I felt like a provider.
It's a lot of pressure to have at 13 years old to feel like you've got to support your family, you've got to support your mom, you have to support yourself. That's
it was mad fun though. I mean, I don't want to forget that part. I was having
sure.
It's what I wanted, but then reality does sink in at a certain point, and you're like, oh, okay, so I gotta. This is real life.
So you,
speaking of mad fun,
yeah.
You said you came from humble beginnings. So what was the first thing you went out and bought yourself once you had some money coming in?
Oh, my God. So I had a credit card.
As the kids say, Chetta, right? Is that what the kids say these days?
Do kids say Chetta?
God, I hope not.
well, we were living in New Jersey when I recorded my first album. And like, I had a sidekick. You know, the phone, the sidekick. And then I also had like a flip phone because I needed two phones because I was just, had my trap phone, whatever. So like got myself a sidekick. That was cool. But
I
then
you like had a literal sidekick, like a little person following you around.
The first big thing I purchased though, and I got in so much trouble. I had a credit card at 13 or 14 and I walked to this jewelry shop near where we lived in Edgewater, New Jersey. And I bought, a chain. I mean, I bought like a diamond cross and I think I bought something else too. I've had this watch that I'm wearing right now since I was 14 or 15 as well. But I spent probably $5,000 on something and my mom took both my phones away and grounded me and like didn't let me do anything. And I had the number one song in America. And, but I was like, I have to be iced out, Ma.
Oh, my God.
Is that weird?
I got in so much trouble.
Is that weird having the number one song in America, but yet
you're grounded.
You're being grounded by your mom?
Oh, my God. Like, it was so embarrassing.
That's going to be a weird dynamic, though.
Oh, it was very strange. I think maybe I'm dramatizing this, but she might have thrown my phone in the Hudson River. I don't remember. Either way, I did go to Target and get a new phone. Because
good for you.
How can you... I feel bad for her, trying to parent somebody who has all this access.
Yeah.
And everybody just trying to say yes. So this shit is really hard.
Now, this song that was the number one hit. Now, as a singer, do you get asked a lot to do that first song?
Oh, yeah.
Do you still do it?
I do.
I mean, would you consider... because you know we have fans that listen to the show from all different places. would you sing like a line? Would you do a line for us?
Oh my god!
Just a tiny bit for fans who are a fan who fans of our podcast that are fans of you, but then also for the fans that are learning.
I also want to add that there could be somebody in this room right now who's a huge Uber fan, perhaps.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not going to mention her name.
It would go like, I've been waiting all day for you, babe. So won't you come sit and talk to me? You tell me how we're going to be together always. Like, how could you say that at 13? What the fuck was I talking about?
Oh, my God, that was so great!
That was amazing, by the way. That was awesome.
Amazing.
That was amazing.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Wow. Wow.
Wowza.
What a voice.
That was really cool.
That's
that was
so
very special.
Cool. Now, did you write that song?
No.
So someone else wrote that
for
you?
Amazing Swedish people. Soulshock and Carlin. Maybe they're not Swedish, but some part of Scandinavia. They've had a lot of hits prior to that and since then. And that was a song that I'm just honestly very lucky that I got to cut.
Have you written a lot of, have you written songs for yourself?
Yes. Really? Everything since, I mean, I actually wrote 3 songs on my first album when I was 12. So I've been writing for a long time, but I think that first experience of like, so I didn't understand Leave, Get Out. To me, it was way too poppy for me because I always considered myself a soul singer, way more in the R&B vibe. So when it went where it went, I was like, oh, so I should just not trust myself, right? Like, so maybe I don't know how to write a hit song. Like, this is just kind of information, feedback that I took on. But that never really stopped me from later on, particularly like really developing as a songwriter and as a collaborator and a co-writer. And I think it's one of my strongest qualities now, which is great.
Amazing. So then, okay. So then you end up at this label, mm-hmm. right? You already explained to us why that label was the move, but then you get there and it's a very tough label. They messed with you a lot, and they weren't very
That was later on.
That was
know?
Later on. That wasn't that was, right away.
It wasn't right away at all.
Okay, so how did that kind of go down? What was it like being at that label?
I'll say that it was just maddening because contractually I didn't own my voice. They were no longer a functioning record label after my second album. So first 2 albums, great. This was family to me. These were my father figures, my uncle figure. This was family. And they changed my life. And I really thought that we were building something that could last forever. That's what I wanted. Because both my mom and I come from broken homes. And I think we were subconsciously seeking, you know, the family.
Yeah.
The production company was even called Da Family. So we were like, yeah, this is great. just eventually it turned into something that we were not familiar with. There was just some scary business dealings going on.
Really?
But I had to remove myself from the situation because I was going to be, I couldn't go down with a burning ship. If they were no longer a functioning label and they could not put out music, I was not going to allow myself to be silenced with them. So, you know, and if I couldn't be let go, then I needed to take legal action and remove myself.
How old were you at this time?
I filed my first lawsuit at 18.
Okay.
And so I had already done, some acting, and there was some upset that they weren't brought into the fold to make money off of that as well. And just a lot of things going on behind the scenes that made me fearful and that made me be like, I've never seen this side of how can go down.
That's the worst. Like,
it was a bummer.
When you have a great relationship with a company or with people, and then you get to see a bad side of them and it ruins it, it's just the...
I think it really affected, because I was at such a young, impressionable age, and I already had the relationship that I had with my father, which was up and down, inconsistent, because that's just what you get when someone is an addict. So I think to have the relationships that I had with these men who were like family to me, I can't even overstate how much it messed with me as a young woman, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Just like my faith in men, I'm like, all y'all are horrible.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Wow, that's not a good lesson to learn.
Yeah.
Ever. You know what I'm saying? At a young age especially, but that's a hard lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very difficult.
A lot more to come with JoJo after this break.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
So yeah. I filed the first lawsuit at 18, and then it was about 4 or 5 years until I was able to get out of that. And then from there, I was like, okay, let's sign another record deal so I can just keep going.
So what were you doing during that 4-year stretch where you weren't...
I was drinking a lot.
Okay.
No, I was really focused on trying to maintain my sanity.
Sure.
But I was also recording constantly. I don't think I've ever taken more than a 5-month break from writing and recording. I made so many versions of a third album that never came out, and I turned them in, and they were like, no. And
you were saying no because they didn't like it, or
because they weren't set up to be able to.
They weren't set up to be able to do it, but perhaps because they didn't like it. Like, I'll never really have clarity on that,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't matter anymore.
Right, sure.
So I've let go of all that material. But it's just, it was very emotionally taxing, and I felt absolutely insane. Like, I just felt totally crazy. So I did, in that time, though, I was able to release music for free, and I took a page out of what I saw people in hip-hop doing, because people weren't, in the pop world, people weren't putting on mixtapes when I started doing that. So I think it was maybe 2010 or 2009 I put out my first one, Can't Take That Away From Me, which was kind of a direct statement to the label being like, this is my relationship with my fans. It has nothing to do with you guys.
Yeah.
So I started putting out music for free on the internet. I also was really inspired by this Drake song called Marvin's Room, and I wrote my own version to it. And that got it went absolutely crazy on the internet.
Oh, yeah. And millions and millions of people listened
to it. And that was a shift, I think, in people's perception of me. They're like, oh, she's She's saying the F word. She's talking about having sex and stuff. Oh, she's not a child anymore. So I think I let my music kind of speak for where I actually was.
Yeah.
During this time, during the lawsuit, were you afraid, like, oh, my God, is this going to affect my career in any way?
Yeah.
Is it going to be over? Am I, you know, kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I was having thoughts, am I over at 21? You know, at 20, I was thinking, what should I do? Like, am I just going to... Just what am I going to do? Because I already... put off going to college. I committed to Northeastern University. I was going to go for sociology. And then I moved to LA instead of staying in Boston to try to make things work with my label because I wanted to put out a third album. I'm like, I'm only going to be young once and college will be there. And so I was just like, did I make the wrong choice? We all wonder if we're making the right decisions with our life. And to me, the stakes just felt so high because I'm like, if I don't make this work for myself, I don't have a cushy family to fall back on. I don't have a home to go back to. Now, so many people have it much worse than me. But when it's you, you're just like, I gotta make this work.
Of course.
So yeah, I definitely was like, I know this is affecting my career. How do I make the best out of this situation? And how do I take care of myself so when I can be let out the gate, I can be ready.
Now, how
I had to keep believing that there was something to be ready for.
Sure. Your fans have been very vocal and seem to always have your back throughout all of this. What type of effect does that have on your motivation or self-esteem as you kind of have gone through so much?
It's been like... I don't know how this sounds, but it's been like the backbone of my motivation, for real. Because I think social media has been such a cool way for me to know that there are people out there who love my music. Because if it weren't for social media, I might just feel 100% just like unsupported and unheard and all these things. But when I was in the lawsuit, they started a Free JoJo movement, and like hashtag Free JoJo. I saw that everywhere. They would come out to the concerts with, oh, thank you, girl. Come out to the concert with posters saying Free JoJo,
wow.
And they made their own merch and all these things. And they really kept me going when I questioned if I could keep going. But then I'm like, oh, I can't let my fans down. These people are amazing and they really believe in me. And they're telling me I've changed their lives and that my music affects them and they're listening and they want more. And that gave me the courage to keep going when I really felt like a total shell of myself. Like when I just had no more fight left because I wanted to continue my journey with them.
Now, you know, fans can be incredibly helpful, but also there's other things that people do to deal with going through the highs and lows of whatever industry you kind of choose to be a part of. I have a therapist that I go and see.
Too.
Do you have one that you like?
Yeah, I've spoken to her for probably 10 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
I mean...
I had a therapist that I was going to for a long time. He quit.
He
quit on me. This is 100% true. I used to do a lot of stupid things with him. Like I was talking one time, I was sitting and talking
like
to
what?
Him.
What? Please tell us.
I was sitting and talking to him about my girlfriend, and in the middle of it, he was like, "Well, she sounds lovely," and I was like, "You want to see a picture?" And he was like, "Sure." And I showed him a picture of Queen Latifah. And that's not my girlfriend.
He didn't think that was funny?
He did not think it was funny. And I thought it was funny. And then I did that. I would do that constantly to him. We would be working on stuff. And then I would comedians, we try to make a joke out of stuff. And so I would joke about things. And he did not like it. And then one day I called in for a session and he was like, oh, I quit. I don't do that anymore. I quit the business. I'm not in that business anymore.
I'm doing something else now.
And I was like, like, oh, so he quit the business. Okay. And then I drove by his office one day and he was walking out of his office, out of his psychology office. And I was like, I thought you quit, you son of a bitch.
I can't quit you.
Yeah. But now I have a good therapist that isn't going to quit. So
well, my therapist might be on the verge of quitting on me. I don't know. I don't know. She's really amazing. And it's just nice to have a sounding board that is totally impartial.
Yeah. Oh my God. So helpful.
So yeah, that's been great. And it's also nice that she's been able to like remind me of my progress, of how far I've come with my own like wellness or my own, way I handle things. Because she's like, you are not the Joe that's fighting, you know, your boyfriend in the street anymore. You're not, you know, the one who's just angry at the world. You are not the one who hates all men. You are not, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So, well, it's good
fantastic.
To have it, like you're saying, it's good to have an impartial audience to go to, whether it's once a week or once a month or however often you go to sit and, you know, talk about things and, you know. So what I'm trying to say, I guess, it's good. It's good to have a therapist to go to and, you know, talk to. And
I feel very fortunate.
And then show, you know, your pictures of Queen Latifah, too. And
absolutely. Please do. Please.
All that stuff.
Please pull that in your next session.
Oh, my God. You're like, I'm seeing someone new. This might come up from left field, but I'm really in love.
It's Queen Latifah.
It's Queen Latifah.
Okay, so now Taylor Swift is in the process of re-recording her albums. You've actually done that on two occasions.
Yes, I re-recorded my first two albums. So when I see people online being like, give me back the original versions, I'm like, they were never there. They were not on streaming services. And that's because, well, from what I understand, my former label didn't make a deal with streaming services. So no background artist has their music on streaming services, meaning Aaliyah, myself, Static, Tank, anything that was under that contract period, Timbaland and Magoo, Toni Braxton. So I saw that there was a loophole in the contract that would allow me to like make new masters because they own those masters, those original masters. So I put my own money up and re-recorded the first two albums as close to the original as possible. Of course, I don't have a 12-year-old or 15-year-old voice anymore. But I wanted to give my fans the nostalgic experience that they wanted to have because it's just super whack that you can't listen to my first two albums. So I did it out of necessity. And
well, how do you do that though? Like, how do you re-record those songs?
You go into a studio.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, do you have to buy the rights to the song?
No, all I have to
do. Or did you just have to license the song to re-record it? How do you do that?
It's just about giving credit to those who have publishing on it. And I don't know about the licensing. I don't think it was that, but I just created completely new masters. So I had my musical director like find the sounds that were as similar as possible to the original things and then replay this, all the live stuff. And then I went in and re-recorded every single background, every single ad lib and everything. So we did about two songs a day for 2 weeks.
Whoa, wow. What?
Because I was, I think I was in the middle of tour. I forget exactly when it was, but it was just everything from the ground up. And I'm very, very thankful because it is scary to like put your money into something that I didn't even know if people really would respond to it or understand the necessity of it for me because my music, I just felt like my history was being deleted right in front of me. And it was very upsetting.
Oh my God, of course.
But I ended up making that money back very quickly.
Great.
So I'm very thankful.
That's so cool.
But you had been hearing from fans too about how they couldn't access those albums. And so that was also an impetus for you to do that too, correct?
That was totally the impetus for it because I was tired of seeing that. They're like, why did you take your music off of Spotify? I'm like, it was never there, from my understanding. I think there was like a ripped version of Leave and of Too Little Too Late and of Baby It's You. There were some like ripped versions that were not official, that were not coming from the highest quality or something. It's confusing, actually. I don't know. But I felt upset that I couldn't be in control of my stuff being out there.
Sure.
So I wanted to do something to remedy that. And this was the closest, this was the best case scenario.
And were you offering those songs up for free or online? Okay.
No, I was putting them up for sale.
Okay.
Just like any other person's music would be consumed that way.
Sure.
So available for streaming and available for, you know, I just wanted to put it on all the platforms.
So smart.
iTunes, Tidal, Spotify, Pandora, wherever you consume music, I wanted my anybody who wanted to listen to JoJo songs to be able to in the way that they should.
And what was it like revisiting?
You're so cool, JoJo. That's so cool.
Oh, my God.
What was it like for you revisiting those songs? Did it kind of take you back to, you know, being 13 again, 14? And
yeah, but also, like, thinking about what those lyrics were, they apply to me way more now than they did then because mm-hmm. I was saying some super grown stuff. And I had never been heartbroken by a lover when I, you know, did Too Little Too Late, for example, or something like that. So now I was able to put my actual adult emotion into it.
Oh, and your fans must have been so happy,
too. They were so happy. Oh, the response actually blew my mind because I was like, am I a weirdo for doing this? You know, I just wanted to make sure that people didn't think that I was just like obsessed with my own voice and just wanted to like re-sing my songs because I'm so not like that at all. It was truly something that I felt I needed to do to be able to move forward.
Right. And did you walk out of those sessions going like, nailed it on the first take, or was it just like a painstaking
it was pretty,
you know,
painstaking
process for you? Like, yeah. I want to get this as close as
yes.
possible.
Yeah, because uh-huh. I didn't want to just like stroke my own ego and like make these into totally new songs in a way that I enjoyed them more.
Sure.
I really wanted to give my fans what they wanted, which was the original things.
Sure.
So I was quite meticulous about trying to get it to sound as close while still showing myself the respect of being like, well, I do have a different voice
mm-hmm.
and I am a different woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I have a quick question for you. So the music industry has changed so much since you started in it. How do you navigate it now as an adult? Is this the way to do it, through Instagram and through following your own path and kind of carving it out yourself? Like, do you have to let a label know that you're doing something when you decide to do it? Like, what's the path?
I have a really dope partnership right now with Warner Records, and Aaron Bashuk, who's the chairman and CEO, he has been a part of my life for like 7 years. He actually signed me right after I got out of Blackground to Atlantic. So we've been trying to put out a project together for a long time.
Wow.
And so I feel really fortunate that when I want to do something, all I have to do is, because it's a partnership, there are purse strings that aren't mine, and there are budgets that need to be approved and everything. But I can call my homie, Aaron, and be like, this is important to me, and here's why. And I feel understood. I feel supported. And vice versa, if there's something that he thinks I should try, we have that relationship and that trust. But I do think that navigating the music industry now, you have to be authentic to yourself. We as consumers, because I am a music lover before anything, we don't accept formulaic, we don't accept the factory line thing that, like, that pop star, that old way of doing things of like the late 90s or whatever. Like, you, authenticity is a necessity. If it's not resonating as true, I don't think it's going to connect. So that's why people love engaging with the artists on live stream and on TikTok, getting to know their personality, because they want to know. It's just a different type of relationship. Like, that mystery is gone. I remember that even when I came out in 2004, when I was 13, it was all about being mysterious and all about like keeping things and not letting anybody know that you have a personal life, or that just all this stuff that totally doesn't apply now. So you have to stay malleable, I guess, or just you have to be ready to grow. You just have to keep growing with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You also, your fans, a lot of them have grown up with you.
Yeah.
And you're a big, significant part of their life. So, you know, if it's nice to be able to connect with them that way. And
it's very special.
Yeah.
To me.
It's really cool.
And being able to, like, see people that are tweeting me from whatever city I'm in, and then putting a face with that handle is always exciting. I'm like, oh my God, you're the one that said that wild thing today. Or you're the one that sent me that funny gif. It's just, it's cute.
So when are we making a movie about your life? When does that movie happen?
It kind of should happen. I feel you.
It should happen.
It's interesting. I need to write down my life first and then maybe base it on that. I don't know, man, but I have so much more to live and so much more to do. 16 years into my career is the first time I ever went to the Grammys. So, like, I have a lot more
and
to do.
And you won!
I have a lot more to do.
I mean, come on!
And to go back to your Grammy Award, do you feel redeemed now a little bit, just from all the ups and downs in your career?
It was a very validating experience to be able to be around my peers and to feel like, I would say redeeming is a appropriate word.
As we wrap things up on this, one question I wanted to throw out to you is, a lot of your fans listen to your music to inspire them and to help them feel good and give them strength. Is there a music or an artist that you listen to that does the same thing for you?
Yes. I'm so obsessed with music. I love it. And it's all for different reasons. But, like, I would say Kendrick is who I listen to the most. Kendrick and J. Cole. I love that K.O.D. album by J. Cole. And because there's so much about being addicted to so many different things, whether it's validation or substances or love or sex. And it's about, there's like one of the first things, it's like, life will bring you, what does he say? Life brings much pain. You know, there are many ways to deal with this pain. Choose wisely. And I love things that feel uplifting, but also have like a little message to them. So yeah, conscious hip hop, I think, has me feeling all those ways. And then when I want to just listen to some amazing singing, I listen to Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, and be reminded of the best singers of all time, you know, the divas I grew up listening to.
I love it. Wonderful.
Fantastic.
Thanks again.
Thanks for having us. We're happy to have you.
Yeah, this was really awesome. Thanks again for coming on the show. Yeah.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks.
Never Surrender is produced by Western Sound. Executive producers are Jack Hergath, Stephen Kramer Glickman, and Ben Adair. Producers are Sabrina Fang and Cameron Kell. Music by Hannes Brown.
On social media, you can check us out on Instagram at Never Surrender Pod, on Twitter at Surrender Pod, and on Facebook at Never Surrender Podcast. You can also email us at neversurrenderpodcast@gmail.com to share your own stories about how you struggled, failed, and ultimately never surrendered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.